You know the feeling, right? You blink and the entire gaming landscape has just, it's completely shifted under your feet.
Oh, absolutely. It's constant.
Right. Like one minute you're trying to map out which massive mega corporation just bought up your favorite indie studio. And the next there's this surprise drop on Steam that completely hijacks your weekend plans.
Yeah. Your whole weekend is just gone.
Gone. We are looking at a thoroughly chaotic current gaming landscape right now.
Yeah.
The industry is simultaneously pushing hardware to these unimaginable hybrid levels and shifting global power centers to entirely new continents.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they're still managing to catch players completely off guard with unexpected software releases.
It is a relentlessly fast-paced ecosystem,
yeah.
Which is why, you know, stepping back and actually analyzing the underlying currents is so essential. You can't just look at a single game release anymore.
No, not at all.
You really have to look at the massive geopolitical and technological tectonic plates shifting underneath it.
And to help us map out those shifting plates, we're pulling from a truly fantastic source for today's deep dive. We are looking at the March 2026 release of the 13th edition of iGaming.
A fantastic read, by the way.
It really is. It's a digital publication by the Moroccan press group, LODJ, also known as Géant de l'Actu. And our mission today is straightforward. We are going to extract the absolute most fascinating nuggets of knowledge from this magazine just to show you that video games are far more than just, you know, software you load up to kill some time. They are high stakes, global businesses, massive cultural touchstones, and honestly, the bleeding edge of consumer tech.
And this particular issue of iGaming is a perfect microcosm of the industry's current contradictions, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating read because you have these incredibly secretive billion-dollar corporate hardware leaks sitting right next to ground-level indie survival tactics.
It's a huge contrast.
Exactly. It really highlights how the entire ecosystem relies on both the giant corporate maneuvers and the grassroots developer community just to sustain itself.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because we absolutely have to start with the hardware side of things.
Oh, definitely.
There has been a ridiculous amount of noise lately regarding the Green Team, but we finally have the leaked internal code name for the next generation Xbox console. Get ready for it. Project Helix.
Project Helix. It's a striking code name for sure. And it arrives at a highly turbulent, very specific moment for Microsoft's gaming division.
Understatement of the year.
Right. If we look at the broader context provided in the source, this leak means a lot more than just a new piece of plastic and silicon hitting the shelves in a few years. Microsoft has been navigating a truly wild ride recently. Between the massive studio acquisitions, the sudden leadership departures, and that highly controversial shift toward releasing formerly exclusive games on multiple platforms, the messaging has been muddy, to say the least.
Which left the community incredibly anxious. I mean, there were entire weeks where the prevailing theory online was that Xbox was just quietly preparing to pack up and exit the hardware business altogether.
Just bow out entirely.
Yeah. Maybe just becoming a third-party publisher.
The confirmation of Project Helix puts a definitive end to those theories, though. But the name itself, Helix, it inherently implies a DNA-level evolution of the Xbox ecosystem.
It sounds biological almost.
Yes. We are not just looking at a box with a faster processor and a better graphics card. The magazine points out that this next generation console is heavily integrating native PC gaming capabilities alongside advanced cloud streaming and next level AI upscaling.
Which makes you wonder if console generations even mean anything anymore.
Exactly.
Or if we're just like subscribing to hardware ecosystems now. Think of it like this. A traditional TV console is like a reliable, comfortable family sedan.
Okay.
You get in, you turn the key, it just works. Every 7 years you buy a new sedan.
Right.
But a high-end gaming PC is like a custom-built temperamental sports car.
Oh, very temperamental.
Super temperamental. It's incredibly powerful, but you're constantly tinkering with it, swapping out parts, tweaking the settings just to get an extra 10 frames per second.
And praying the drivers don't crash.
Exactly. So Project Helix sounds like they are trying to build the ultimate hybrid engine. You get the plug-and-play comfort of that console sedan for the living room, but under the hood, it is spliced with the brute force adaptability and the raw PC DNA of the sports car.
That analogy holds up really well against what the leaks are suggesting. By bridging that gap, Microsoft is acknowledging that the rigid wall between PC players and console players is an outdated concept.
It's just crumbling.
Whether Project Helix ends up being a traditional box sitting under your television, a modular system, or even a cloud-reliant hybrid, It proves that the next era of Xbox is officially in motion. They are trying to capture the PC market's flexibility without losing the console market's accessibility.
Hardware only matters if you actually have games to play on it, though.
True.
And Capcom seems to be taking just as many risks with their software as Microsoft is with their hardware. Let's start with a genuine unicorn in the gaming world.
Unicorn is the perfect word for it.
A game that actually releases early. Capcom's highly anticipated sci-fi action game, Pragmata, has officially been moved up. Originally, we were expecting it on April 24, but it is now hitting digital storefronts on Friday, April 17th, 2026.
We are so conditioned to brace for delays in this industry, games getting pushed back by months or even years. So seeing a release date move forward, even by a single week, feels jarring.
I had to read the headline twice.
It is a highly unusual, incredibly positive anomaly.
And the game itself sounds completely wild. Yeah. You're exploring this breathtaking, highly detailed, dystopian lunar world.
The visuals are stunning.
Yeah, and you play as this protagonist in a bulky spacesuit accompanied by a very mysterious holographic companion named Diana. We've been getting weird, cryptic teasers for this game since the original PS5 showcase era, and now we are finally going to the moon early.
What's fascinating here is what an early release actually signals to the broader market and the player base.
What do you mean?
Well, functionally, a one-week bump does not change much for your calendar, right? But psychologically, it is a massive flex. It projects immense developer confidence in the final build. It tells the community, we are not scrambling for last-minute bug fixes. The game is polished, it is ready, and we want you to have it now.
That's a great point. It's a statement.
Furthermore, it is a brilliant tactical maneuver. By moving the date, Capcom might be intentionally clearing the runway to avoid release clashes with other major titles, ensuring Pragmata commands the entire news cycle for that week.
It totally dominates the conversation. But Pragmata wasn't the only thing Capcom had up their sleeve.
Oh, not even close.
Over at the recent Capcom Spotlight event, they dropped an absolute bombshell regarding one of their most beloved properties. They announced a brand new Resident Evil 2 project.
This is where the strategy gets truly unpredictable. The original 1998 Resident Evil 2 is practically a holy grail in the survival horror genre.
A classic.
And the 2019 remake is widely considered a modern masterclass in game design. They have successfully perfected this specific experience twice. So the revelation in the magazine that this new project is a partnership with Bandai Namco is a massive twist.
It really throws a wrench into everything we thought we knew about Capcom's remake strategy. I mean, Bandai Namco is a powerhouse, but you associate them with fighting games like Tekken, anime adaptations, or publishing massive RPGs like Elden Ring.
Right.
What does their involvement mean for the zombie-infested streets of Raccoon City?
It strongly implies we are not looking at another graphical update or a standard over-the-shoulder remake. When a studio like Capcom partners with a company that has Bandai Namco's specific pedigree, you have to assume a radical departure in mechanics or genre.
So what are we thinking here?
The source text poses some incredibly compelling questions about this. Are we looking at an arcade-style, co-op spin-off, a deep, complex tabletop and digital hybrid experience? Or perhaps a completely new genre adaptation entirely set within the confines of the Raccoon City Police Department?
Man, as a massive fan of Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield, it is incredibly fun to theorize about. Imagine a full-on, mechanics-heavy fighting game using the Resident Evil roster.
That would be wild.
Or some kind of asymmetric multiplayer experience that actually works. The legacy of Resident Evil 2 carries so much weight, but if any duo can pull off a genre pivot, it's Capcom and Bandai Namco. It shows they aren't afraid to let other creatives play in their most successful sandbox.
It illustrates a key survival tactic for legacy intellectual property. You cannot perpetually rely on nostalgia. At a certain point, to keep a 25-year-old brand relevant, you must invite outside innovation and risk alienating the purists to find a new audience.
Speaking of innovation and community dynamics, let's transition over to the PC gaming space. We need to talk about how developers are keeping us absolutely hooked, because on March 5, 2026, the community got a massive surprise drop.
The huge one.
Slay the Spire 2 officially launched into Steam Early Access.
The influence of the original Slay the Spire cannot be overstated. It essentially birthed the modern roguelike deck builder genre. They created a formula that was virtually flawless, spawning countless imitators. Following that up is a monumental task.
And now the sequel is in the wild, and players are already losing hundreds of hours to it. The source mentions we're getting brand new playable characters, returning favorites with entirely revamped mechanics, and a massive pool of new cards and relics to build runs around.
It's a huge content drop.
Yeah, but what I find really compelling is their decision to drop it straight into Early Access rather than waiting for a polished 1.0 release.
The Early Access model is particularly vital for a game so heavily dependent on intricate balance and the whims of RNG. When a studio like Megacrit opens the doors early, they are essentially recruiting thousands of highly dedicated players to act as quality assurance.
Basically, free playtesting.
Exactly. For a deck builder, the meta is incredibly fragile. You introduce one new relic or slightly tweak a returning character's card cost, and suddenly you have an infinite damage loop that breaks the entire game.
Right. Someone figures out how to play 20 cards in one turn and just one-shots the boss.
Precisely. By letting the community play early, the players actively participate in the development journey. They find the broken combos, they test the viability of new classes, and they help the developers refine and balance the entire experience in real time.
It is a symbiotic relationship. You get to be a test pilot for a highly volatile, card-slinging jet, figuring out what works and what crashes and burns against the elite enemies.
That's a good way to put it.
But shaping the meta isn't the only way developers build fierce loyalty. Let's talk about the fine art of the gacha apology.
Oh, yes.
Because over in the highly popular game Heartopia, players experienced a scheduled 3-hour server downtime on March 4th.
Server maintenance is an inevitable reality of modern live service gaming. It is inherently disruptive. You log on to do your dailies, and you are locked out staring at a maintenance screen.
It's the worst feeling. But Heartopia handles it the way the best live service games do, by handing out free apology loot.
Naturally.
If you log into your in-game mailbox after the servers come back up, you get a care package with free gold and wishing stars. Now, if you play these types of games, you know wishing stars are the premium currency. That is exactly what you use for pulling new items and those highly coveted banner characters.
But there's a catch, isn't there?
There is a catch. The developers stated these compensation rewards will only stick around for a few days. If you don't log in and claim them quickly, they vanish.
This is a brilliant, highly calculated psychological retention strategy. By giving out premium currency as compensation for a routine technical outage, the developers instantly transform a negative player experience into a celebrated event. They are effectively conditioning in the player base to look forward to server downtime.
Which totally flips the script. You go from being annoyed that you can't play to refreshing the game client, hoping the maintenance takes an extra hour so they give you even more wishing stars?
It satisfies every tier of their player economy.
Yeah.
It is a massive boon for the free-to-play gamers who meticulously hoard these handouts to progress without spending real money.
Hmm.
And it equally validates the whales, the players who spend large amounts of cash, by offering a token of appreciation for their continued investment in the ecosystem. Furthermore, by putting a strict time limit on claiming the rewards, they force a massive spike in concurrent logins the moment the servers go live. It is a masterclass in engagement.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. We have talked about giant hardware corporations, legacy studio partnerships, and indie developer tactics. But what about the geopolitical side of gaming? Let's zoom out and look at the African gaming scene, specifically Morocco.
This is arguably the most vital development in the entire magazine. The gaming industry is rapidly decentralizing. Historically, development power was concentrated in North America, Japan, and parts of Europe.
Yeah, those are the big three hubs.
But the emerging markets are aggressively claiming their space. According to the publication, Tuesday and Rabat marked the official launch of the second edition of the Video Game Incubator.
Building a video game is incredibly difficult, and doing it without structural industry support is almost impossible. So Morocco is stepping up in a massive way. They're taking 12 local Moroccan gaming entrepreneurs and giving them the ultimate launchpad.
It's a comprehensive program.
We're talking deep mentorship, direct access to funding, and the kind of structural business support required to turn a passionate indie team into a viable global studio.
What we really need to examine is the intense institutional weight behind this incubator. This is not a small, grassroots, local effort operating out of a basement.
No, not at all.
It is officially backed by the Moroccan Ministry of Youth, Culture, and Communication. Furthermore, it is organized in partnership with the French Embassy in Morocco. This entire collaboration is the direct result of an intergovernmental declaration of intent signed by Morocco's King Mohammed VI and French President Emmanuel Macron.
That is the part that really blows my mind. You have heads of state signing international declarations of intent specifically to foster video game development. It shows how massive and economically crucial this medium has become on the world stage.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the geopolitical implications are profound. For a long time, video game development in certain regions was dismissed as a niche hobby or a risky artistic endeavor.
Right, a basement project.
Exactly. This level of governmental and international diplomatic backing sends a powerful signal. It validates gaming as a state-supported tool for economic diversification and cultural soft power. By providing these 12 entrepreneurs with international expertise, they are building the pipeline for a globally competitive industry.
They are essentially laying the groundwork for the next massive AAA or breakout indie hit to come straight out of North Africa. The raw talent has always been there, but now they are building the institutional bridges to get those games onto the global storefronts.
Yes.
It completely changes the map of where our favorite games might come from in the next 5 years.
It is a definitive proof that the future of game development is borderless. The infrastructure is catching up to the global demand.
Now, speaking of things bridging together in unexpected ways, we have to look at the quickies section of the magazine. There is a headline and an accompanying image here that really makes you stop and analyze what you are looking at.
It's definitely an eye catcher.
The headline reads, "When MAGA meets Pokemon Pocopia."
This is a particularly striking piece of media, and just to frame this conversation correctly, we are looking at this purely from an objective media analysis standpoint today. We are not evaluating or taking a position on the political movements involved.
Absolutely.
Our focus is entirely on the visual and cultural collision presented in the source material.
Just strictly reporting on what the magazine put on the page, we are just looking at how these two very different worlds bleed into each other. So the image shows this incredibly cozy top-down game aesthetic.
Very familiar visual style.
Yeah, if you glance at it, it looks exactly like a screenshot from an old-school Pokemon game, or maybe an indie farming simulator like Animal Crossing. You have the soft color palette, the little pixelated trees, the paths, the cute little buildings. It evokes a very specific feeling of digital comfort.
Right.
But right over the center of this nostalgic artwork is the text, "Make America Great Again," written out in these colorful, bubbly, almost cartoonish letters that perfectly match the game's font style.
The juxtaposition is what makes it so arresting. It perfectly encapsulates a major trend in modern digital media. What we are observing here is how cozy, traditionally escapist digital aesthetics can be unexpectedly co-opted or collided with very real-world, highly charged political branding.
It creates a real sense of friction. Usually when you engage with that top-down, cozy art style, your brain goes into relaxation mode. You associate it with watering digital crocs, organizing your inventory, or exploring a safe little town.
You don't associate it with stark, real-world political slogans. And that friction is exactly the point of the analysis. It demonstrates how completely pervasive political imagery and messaging have become in all facets of digital life. The boundaries between pure digital escapism, the places we go to unplug from the news cycle, and real-world political landscapes are increasingly porous.
They're blending together.
When a publication like iGaming highlights this specific intersection, it proves that no aesthetic, no matter how comforting or seemingly detached from reality, is immune to being utilized for broader messaging. It is a testament to how gaming culture is now entirely intertwined with broader societal currents.
It really forces you to re-examine how we consume media and how easily a comforting visual language can be repurposed. So what does this all mean?
A lot to take in.
We have covered some serious ground today. We started with the leaks surrounding Microsoft's Project Helix, looking at how the hardware evolution is actively trying to merge the comfort of consoles with the raw power of PCs into these new hybrid machines.
Mm-hmm.
We explored Capcom's bold strategies, from their incredible confidence in releasing the Lunar Adventure Pragmata early, to their wild curveball of partnering with Bandai Namco for whatever this new Resident Evil 2 project turns out to be.
We also examined the intricate mechanics of player loyalty. We looked at how Megacrit is using the community-driven early access of Slay the Spire 2 to balance their highly volatile meta.
Right, shaping the game live.
And we analyzed the brilliant psychological retention strategy of utilizing apology loot in games like Heartopia to turn server outages into celebrated events.
And then we zoomed way out to look at the macro trends. We discussed the geopolitical rise of Morocco's gaming ecosystem, where international governments and heads of state are actively funding local indie studios to compete on the global stage.
A huge shift.
Plus, we took that fascinating look at how cozy gaming aesthetics are colliding with real-world political slogans in the media. So I want to turn it over to you. Out of this massive stack of gaming intel from iGaming, what stood out the most to you?
There's so much to pick from.
Are you more excited about the dissolution of hardware boundaries, the surprise early releases, or the global shift in where our games are actually being developed?
It is a substantial amount of information to process, but I want to leave you with a final thought that connects the various threads we have discussed today.
Let's hear it.
We are seeing major hardware manufacturers like Microsoft aim to create hybrid, cloud-reliant machines with Project Helix. Simultaneously, we are watching global governments, like in Morocco, actively fund and elevate local studios to ensure their games reach an international audience. This raises an important question for the future. As the hardware boundaries between PC, console, and cloud dissolve, and as game development becomes truly borderless and globally funded, will the next decade of gaming see the complete death of the traditional console exclusive? Are we rapidly moving toward a future defined entirely by borderless cross-platform ecosystems where everyone simply plays everything, everywhere, regardless of the plastic box sitting under their TV?
That is definitely something to mull over the next time you boot up your system and look at your library. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the 13th edition of iGaming. We love unpacking these complex sources and exploring the broader implications with you. Keep exploring, keep playing, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.